This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
And this is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth. Tom Bombasuto, living well down there.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome back.
I made it here. You know.
Yeah, we're glad to have you. Yeah. Glad to have you. Yeah, you just made it in the nick of time.
Mm-hmm.
But we're here tonight on an open show, Tomas.
Yes, we are.
So that means that our listeners are our guests tonight. Okay. So they get to call and say, this is what I want to talk about. This is what I feel is the most important topic to me in the entire world, and I want to see if you can help me with this question, be it on estate planning or income taxes or elder care or IRAs or 401ks or insurances or auto insurance, home insurance, long-term care insurance, mortgages. We talked about mortgages today in our lunch in-service lunch, as we call it. College planning,
right.
You know, and some of the strategies we use to, you know, for high income people and getting the American Opportunity Credit when technically they shouldn't get it. It should be phased out on them. There's all kinds of topics people could talk about, but they get to choose what those topics are. And if you want to call in, our phone number is 410-922-6680. 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and ask your question, it's an open show tonight, and therefore you're the guest. You get Tom, I don't know what I did there. I pulled something out.
All right.
I can still hear, though.
You can still hear.
I can only hear in one ear,
though.
That's
right.
You know? Why don't you talk for a second while I put this back in?
That's right. So we want people to call in at 410-922-6680, and we'll address your topics, whatever it might be. I just left a client we were working on to get some Roth IRA dollars start to be set aside for them because they've built up a nice pool of IRA assets, and but they don't have any after-tax, you know, that free money that's going to come where they're not going to have to pay taxes on it in the future. So lots of strategies out there, whether it be, you know, Medicare, Medicaid, when do you start to withdraw from Social Security, all those numbers of things that might come up on somebody's radar screen. So tonight we're going to answer those questions. So for the next 50 minutes, we are available for you, and dial in at 410-922-6680. And it looks like Anita's getting somebody on the line out there, but
well, we do. Let's do a quick Drew's view, and the topic I wanted to talk about is, you know, the greatest gift that parents can give the children. Now, this is going to sound a little strange, but I'm known to be strange occasionally, so it's really not out of the ordinary for me. But the greatest gift that a parent, I think, can give us, but when I'm talking about a parent, I'm talking about a parent to an adult child.
Okay.
So somebody who's in their 70s or 80s, and do this gift for the child, and that is to pre-plan their own personal funeral.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that might sound like, oh, you know, he's hoping he's going to tell me something really good, you know.
Right.
But, you know, you think about it. When a parent passes away, no matter how old they are, a child is impacted, and they've got to go in a very short period of time to a funeral parlor, make decisions that they've never, ever talked to their parent about as to what they want to do and, you know, and so forth. Whereas if a parent makes that decision, I'm going to go and, you know, probably may not ever need this for 5, 10, 15, 20 years, whatever it is, but it's all done. You know, the children don't have to worry about it. No one has to question as to whether this is my desire or not.
Right.
It's pretty much pre-planned. You just went through this.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, it couldn't be more timely for me. I've actually thought about, you know, writing an article about the whole process. But, you know, about 3.5 weeks ago, my mother passed. And the difference in what you're talking about is the fact that I'm an only child. So in some ways it's easier, in some ways it's harder. And you know, we didn't have any discussions. There wasn't any wrestling I had with siblings about, you know, what outfit she should wear or, you know,
right.
that they should put on her or what jewelry or what ring. We were able to make that. My wife and I were able to make that.
Or whether you should spend
decisions.
This much on the casket or even cheaper whether you should
things.
Have a big memorial service or a
right.
party afterward
right.
or
all
that
things.
Kind of stuff.
Yeah, so I think you know, it's a blessing to the children in those moments of stress, because it is a stressful, even as much as you may feel prepared or, you know, we're in the business, we deal with this stuff all the time, it's just going through that process. And we were blessed by, you know, Evans Funeral Chapel up in Hereford. They did an awesome job and they helped us through that process. But that would be a great gift, Drew. And it's not just that, I'm going to expand it for 1 second, it's just overall discussions and planning. There's a whole silent generation out there that doesn't communicate with their children about finances and other things. And it's helpful to just kind of thought through that and work through those details so there's not a big mess when the inevitable happens.
Right. So we're going to write an article on that. When we get it ready, we'll let people know. We're going to Lenny in Gardenville. Lenny, how can we help you?
Yes, indeed. I've gotten some mail recently from a couple of different conservative organizations who are claiming that the present administration wants to raise the inheritance and death taxes higher and higher. So is there truth in what they're mailing me about?
You know, I guess you could say there's a shred of truth there, but there's really no truth to it. Yes, President Obama has put it in his budget that he wants to raise the inheritance taxes or the death taxes, the estate taxes. He wants to lower the minimum down to like $3.5 million and still with portability, so that would mean $7 million you could leave to your children. And he wants to raise the rate from 40% up to 45%. But he's really not, it's not something he's putting in the budget that he really wants to do. He's putting in it in the budget because he knows it's a bargaining chip he can use with the Republicans to protect something else in the budget that he's really passionate about. So, you know, there is a, you could say there's a shred of truth, but it's such a small, trivial thing that is highly unlikely to happen. That I wouldn't even begin to worry about it. I wouldn't worry about it anyway unless your estate was worth more than $5 or $6 million, period.
Well, I don't fall into that category.
Well, if you don't, then you don't even have to worry about it. You know, it's only a small 1% of our population that even have to worry about if he was able to get it through at this moment in time. So, you know, I would just shred it and not worry about it.
And you also have state of Maryland that's going to do, you know,
there's some
a couple
beautiful
of
signs up on churches that say, pray for peace.
Yeah. Amen.
And we need peace here in Baltimore and the world. That's why I set up PrayForOurLeaders.net. And now we've got 19 wonderful prayer and Bible study activities for every church everywhere. And God bless you guys for your good work. And thank you for your help and your prayers.
All right, Lenny. Thank you. You take care. And right now, if you'll hold on, Melissa, we'll be right back. We have to take a pause right now. Going to Nick Rehack and traffic. Be right back. Money, riches, and wealth.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Mood music, that's what that is. What do you think?
I don't know. Looks could kill.
Yes. Anyway, we're here. Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're on an open show. That means you get to be the guest. You get to determine the course of our conversation tonight. If you want to call in and ask a question, there are plenty of lines open, 410-922-6680. And we do have Melissa on the line. She has been waiting. Hopefully she's still there. Melissa, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, go ahead. Your turn.
Hi, I am calling, and I want to know why I should even work anymore.
I'm with you. I'm not going to work anymore either. But go ahead. Tell me why you don't want to work anymore.
Well, I personally know a relative, and I have done some research, that millionaires are receiving taxpayer-paid Obamacare, tuition assistance, food stamps, and a multitude of other programs because they report no income. They can have assets of $50 million, and if they report no income, the taxpayers have to pay for it. So you have people making $35,000, $40,000 a year supporting multimillionaires.
Well, you know, but, you know, that's you're absolutely correct, because I've actually done that with clients. And the problem, though, is, Melissa, is these are the, you know, there were talk on the Republican side. They said, look, if you're going to do this, make sure that we're right, that these people need the assistance. Don't just do it the way you're talking about doing it. And they totally denied what they were trying to say, and they put the law in this way. And my opinion is, with my clients, is you pass a law, and this is what you say the law says, then, you know, I'm going to follow the law. And whether I like it or not, whether I like people getting the credit or not, that's irrelevant, in my opinion, because that's the way law works. The law works. If I don't agree with it and it's against my client, I force them to pay the taxes and so forth. But if the law says you can get this benefit and we're going to give it to you if your income lines up with this, you know, I do it. And, you know, I understand your frustration. That's why I'm a big fan of let's get rid of all this social engineering in the income tax law. It's totally ridiculous. So I agree with you.
Pathetic.
I agree. It's pathetic.
Why should I get up and go to work every day?
Well, you know, there are a lot of reasons, you know, with what government does that we shouldn't get up and go to work every day. But unfortunately, we have to, and we just got to overcome the stupidity and just keep moving on and voting right, mm-hmm. hoping mm-hmm. that we get people finally come in line to change this government the way it ought to be. Anyway, I appreciate your comments. I got to move on to Francis in Baltimore. Francis, Social Security, what do you want to talk about?
Yes, I have a question pertaining to Social Security. In your opinion, which is the best way to gain the most benefits? At what age should a person retire or consider retirement? At the age 62 or 66?
Well, the answer to that question is you have to tell me when you're going to die first. So when are you going to die? And what age?
That's a good question.
Well, it is, but that's the answer to the Social Security question. Yet, if you're in relatively good health, Francis, okay, are you in good health?
Yes.
So you're in good health. Are you married or single?
Married.
Married. Your spouse in good health?
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay. And then there's lots of cool strategies, and you're normally going to get the most bang for your buck out of Social Security by waiting. The highest earner should wait until they're 70, but there's all kinds of little cool strategies that you can implement between you and your spouse to get spousal benefits between the ages of 66 and 70, or 67 and 70, depending on what your age is right now. And you should learn about those strategies. You know, you want to go online and do a Social Security maximizing analysis using a computer program such as, there's a free one with T. Rowe Price. We use a relatively sophisticated one that we use for our clients. But, you know, you just need to find one of them. But normally waiting until you're 70, but using these strategies to get some extra income between 66 and 70 is going to maximize, and it'll easily outpace any other strategy you implement, even with earnings expectations, by $40,000 to $50,000 over your lifetime. All right?
Can I also ask a follow-up question?
Real quick, follow-up.
Yeah, I happen to be also a federal employee at with a DSP at Blue Point Retirement. I'm getting a lot of offers from different private companies requesting to put that money in annuities as opposed to keeping them in the DSP plan. What do you think about that? Which is the best way of gaining the most interest on
well, then the answer to your question is it really depends on what you're trying to accomplish, what risk you're willing to take, and so forth. But those annuities are going to cost you easily 2-5% per year in fees, whereas your TSP account has a fee rate of basically zero. And therefore, if you just go from a fee perspective, the TSP program is hands down better than any annuity that they're offering you. But there's other reasons that you might want to consider different strategies, but I'm pretty confident you're going to find that the annuity approach is not necessarily going to be a good approach. That's actually the number one enforcement area of the TSP people are concerned that people offering these deals to people like yourself, Francis, are breaching their fiduciary duty to tell you to move out of the TSP plan and into an annuity that's paying big commissions and big fees. All right? Good question. Good follow-up. Jake in Hartford, how can I help you?
Colin, I heard you talking earlier about the inheritance tax and the death tax.
Right.
And how, you know, you shouldn't really even worry about it because it's not a big deal unless you have, what would you say, $5 to $7 million to leave?
I said $5 million, yep, okay.
So what, I don't agree with the whole idea of the inheritance tax and the death tax.
It's the most absurd tax. It's the most evil tax that government has ever come up with. But anyway, go ahead.
What's the best way to get around it? Because take my family, we're farmers, and it's not a big farm, but it's a larger farm. We own more ground than most people do. So, you know, that leaves you land rich and money poor, so you don't have the money to hire the lawyers to get around it. All you do is hope that, you know, your kids, or in my case, my brother and I, were able to save up enough money to be able to afford that inheritance tax when something happens, God forbid, to my parents.
But there is, in your situation, unless your farm is worth more than $5 million, and actually, right now, it would have to, assuming both parents are still alive, are they both parents still alive? So it would really be $10,860,000 under the current law.
Okay.
That you'd even have to worry about it. Now, you are in the state of Maryland, so if your parents died, both died before 2019, you do have a problem in Maryland that right now, this year, you can't have an estate if both died before the end of this year, God forbid.
Right.
It would be only $1.5 million of value, and Maryland would want somewhere between 10% and 15% of everything that your estate is worth over $1.5 million. So if you get to 2019 that one or both of your parents are alive, it would be literally $10,860,000, and it could be as much as $11 million or $12 million by 2019.
Versus the one,
and Maryland got sort of smart. Maryland's not that smart, but they got a little bit of brains, and they raised the estate tax finally last year, that you're going to $1.5 million this year, $2 million next year, $3 million in 2017, $4 million in 2018, and then equivalent to the federal exemption in 2019, which currently, if you use portability and so forth, is $10,860,000. And if your parents are young and active and you've got a great possibility they're going to be alive in 2019 or longer, you probably don't have a lot to worry about, but you should definitely be looking at this issue. There's some little simple things you can do that aren't costly that can alleviate a good portion of it, even if, God forbid, something happened in the next few years. All right?
They say you should be good until, if you get them through 2019, you don't want to, you're
2019, as long as your parents' estate is not worth more than $5 or $10 million even, you're probably not going to have a huge issue. But even if you're land poor, you should still be meeting with somebody to just overview it and determine, am I really free of worry about this? Don't just assume it because you called in on a talk show and somebody gave you that advice. But that's the general gist of what's going on, all right?
I can't believe Maryland did something that made sense.
Hey, look, there is hope for them every once in a while. They voted for Larry Hogan, too.
Unbelievable, thank God.
All right, Jake. You take care.
You.
All right, we got to go to another pause. with Nick Rehak. I can't hang up on that caller there, Natives, but you go ahead and take it away, Nick Rehak. We'll be right back. Money, Rich, and Wealth.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. And we're just going right to our callers, John and Glen Burnie. John, how can we help you?
Yeah, I have a friend who has a green card and from Brazil who got a job at the Brazilian embassy. And she asked me, and she was told there that they don't have, that it's not... doesn't have to report the income, that it's Brazilian income, and the only thing they withhold on her is Brazilian Social Security.
Well, that's because, John, because she works in the embassy. You realize an embassy is soil of Brazil, and therefore she works in the embassy, she's on Brazilian soil working for the Brazilian government, even though it's in the United States. Same true with United States citizens working for the State Department in an embassy in any other country in the world. If they're in the embassy working, they're in the United States working for the United States.
I see. So she does not have to report that.
No, sir. Not if she's working in the embassy. If she was working anywhere else, then she would have to report it to the United States.
Okay.
So she has a part-time job.
Does she have to file Brazilian returns? You don't know that.
She would file a Brazilian return, absolutely, just like my clients. I have clients in the Jordanian embassy, and my clients in the Jordanian embassy file a U.S. income tax return, but they do not file a Jordanian return. So that's the reason why they're like that. All right.
I guess theoretically, if she just didn't file a return, nothing in Brazil.
Well, I don't know anything about Brazil income taxes. They're pretty high, though. And you know what? Brazil may be one of those countries like a lot of the European where, you know, their taxes are almost all like our Social Security taxes. It just comes right out of your paycheck and you don't ever file an income tax return because their tax system is just a basic flat tax. How much did you make? This is how much we're taking. This is for your Social Security, your Medicare, and for all your income taxes. See you later. Have a good life with the 20% we left you over.
So from the point of view of her point of view, she would have to find out what the Brazilian law is.
Yeah, and I would bet that the reason she doesn't file a Brazilian tax return is because they have some sort of flat tax, and it just comes right out of her paycheck, and she doesn't even have to file an income tax return unless she were a business in Brazil. All right, John?
Thank you so much.
All right.
Okay.
Bye. Mm-hmm. And we're going to Betsy in Parkville. Betsy, how can we help you?
Barely hear you because I'm in the car, so please forgive me if I overtalked you.
Okay.
My question deals actually with my daughter. She's 47 years old. She has Crohn's disease. She's currently on unemployment, but unable to find work. And apparently unemployment covers everything but $2 a month. And that's all she has left for food, she said. But she's been told she is not eligible for food stamps. She's not eligible for Medicaid, and she cannot apparently apply for disability while she's on unemployment. And once unemployment runs out, she'll have no income. So what do I do to help her?
Okay, you want to hang up and listen on the radio?
I would do that. Thank you very much.
All right. You go ahead, and I'll wait a second and make sure she's hung up and listening on the radio. So I'll hang up on her there. Well, Anita hung up on her. See, Anita's like...
She's a pro.
She's a pro. She's like omniscient. She says, hey, he wants me to hang up, so I'm going to hang up for him. That's anyway, nice. Betsy, the answer to your question is she should file for Social Security disability, even though she's on unemployment. If she can prove that her disability began, she can file for Social Security disability because it's going to take that she's at least 6 months out of work, and that and unemployment runs, if I'm not mistaken, for at least a year, if not a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of 6 months, she can that since she's been disabled, she can apply for Social Security unemployment. I mean, the Social Security disability. Mm-hmm. And then there she's going to have to prove through her medical records and so forth that her disability is likely to last more than 1 year. Okay. She can also apply for disability income with her previous employer if they had a disability policy. But other than that, you're really left with government programs, and the way she's going to be able to apply for those government programs will be dependent upon her income and her assets. Assets and income are usually the determination of whether she's eligible. So if her only income is unemployment and her medical insurance is running out, she can go to the exchange. She can call the exchange up, the Maryland Exchange, call the Maryland Health Exchange up and say, here's my situation. I'm running out of unemployment. My income on unemployment is only this. My medical insurance is going to run out at whatever day. And if her income is low enough, she may go on Medicaid, and or she may get medical insurance, but for a very low monthly amount of money. And then if she's her income stays low after the unemployment is ready to run out, she can then begin applying for other government benefits. But the first thing I try is Social Security disability, as long as the disability has lasted at least 6 months. And even though she's on unemployment right now, she would still be able to apply for Social Security disability if she can prove that her unemployment is or that her illness is unlikely to be able to go back to work after unemployment runs out. Now, you know, unemployment is an interesting thing because basically she's saying that mm-hmm. I'm unemployed, I'm employable, but I'm unemployed at the moment.
Right.
So there's where the rub comes in. And but I still believe that she's going to be able to. And Mr. Social Security is probably going to be back on the show soon.
Yep.
You know, and we can check in with him also.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to go one more caller right now. Dan.
Hey, Drew.
Yeah, Dan.
How y'all doing?
Good.
I'm sorry for your friend's so loss of his mother.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Listen, what's the difference between the bank? Regular bank and a credit union, is one more lenient than the other, and which one is trickier? And do the guidelines for credit union differ from the banking, where you know, like you were withdrawing any amount of money? Do you have a limit on the amount of money you can withdraw from a credit union opposed to the bank, or you have to fill out paper when you draw a certain amount of money out of the bank in both institutions? Period.
Well, banks are.
I'm kind of lying. I have enough action, but I want to hear that information.
Well, banks are more stricter than credit unions for sure, but at the same time, they both it's the Secret Service that has the rules as to how much cash you can withdraw from a bank without having to tell them, because that's a typical way that people do all kinds of illegal activities and so forth. And so that's why they want to know that. It's a source of them being able to figure that kind of stuff out. So it doesn't matter whether you're a credit union or a bank as to whether they're going to be able to have to report that issue. Mm-hmm. When you say stricter, are we just referring to taking money out of the bank, or are we referring to something else? Or is he still there?
I found out.
Yeah.
With credit unions, they are much more nicer to deal with than banks. Banks, I mean, the banks, they act so crazy and so.
You have to remember, Dan, that credit unions are technically associations of shareholders of depositors,
right.
And the credit union is basically a collection of members, and so the members sort of own the credit union to some degree. Banks are run by corporations that are for profit, looking to make money, and they're regulated strictly, and so that's why you're going to find credit unions are nicer than banks. But there's also some detriments to credit unions versus banks. But,
And what is that? The
Well, one of the detriments to credit unions versus banks is the availability of the credit union in some in some situations. Now, many credit unions have joined networks that you can get your money out of any ATM machine in the country.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, when I say there are some detriments,
they've become more similar over time.
They have become more similar, very similar. But if you have rising interest rates, a credit union is going to have lower rates in a period of rising interest rates. We haven't seen rising interest rates in banks in a while.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if rates started to rise, banks will move faster than credit unions, and that's just because of their portfolios and how they operate and so forth. But you're right.
What about the $250,000 that you think? Do they still?
They both insure it, but the credit union's insured under, what do they call that, Tom?
It's a different
name, whereas banks insured under FDIC, but they're both basically, now the government, the federal government has given carte blanche guarantee to the FDIC. I think they've also given the same thing to the credit union insurance agency. But I can't quote you on that because I remember carte blanche when George Bush Sr. said carte blanche FDIC is covered by the federal government, full faith and credit. I don't know about credit unions, but I think that happened in the 2008 crisis. They came out and said credit unions are backed by the full faith and credit of the United States government.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's gotten to the point where, you know, credit union or bank, as long as you get all the services you want, you can deposit your money, get your money out, et cetera, you're good to go. I have to run.
What's the limit you can borrow? Get out to bank account at a credit union.
Excuse me.
What's the limit that you can? Can you go? If you put in $10,000, can you get out $10,000?
Sure.
You can get out $100,000. You just have to fill out a form if you take it in cash. If you wanted to just get a check, you can get a check for $1 million out of a bank tomorrow if you want to. We've done it. So
if you have $1 million in there to take out.
Well, we had a client that had a few $1 million in bank accounts, and we took it out and put it into an investment account in a matter of 24 hours.
Sure.
So it really, you know, credit union or bank, it doesn't matter, my friend. All right?
All right, Drew, thanks.
Take care. Mm-hmm. I have to go to the weather guy. What's the weather guy's name? Whatever his name is, we're going to weather. Tell us what's happening.
Show. Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
We're not sure what Anita was up to there.
I'm going to get up and tap a little or something.
Really? You know? Really? So anyway, we're here, Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're on an open show. We have about 5 minutes left. Probably could take one or two callers at the most. We do have a question, though, here, Tom.
Uh-huh.
It is a coin collection taxable when sold? They're not on the phone anymore. They just wanted to listen. And so the answer to that is yes. Mm-hmm. And it depends, actually, as to whether it's going to be reported to the government. So, for example, let's say I had a coin collection worth $800.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, I had an old penny collection
and I
go to a coin dealer and he says, I'll give you $500 for it. You know, no one's going to know that I sold it to him for $500. But let's say my father had a coin collection and he passes away and his coin collection, when I go to a dealer, is worth $32,000. That dealer has a responsibility to file a 1099-S with the federal government to say that somebody came in and sold a collectible for a significant amount of money, and we're letting you know. And matter of fact, if you do an auction like with Alex Cooper or Sotheby's, or pretty much any big auctioneer, if they want to still be in business and they sell something, and I don't know what the limit is. I think it's $2,000 or $2,500. If it's more than that, or is it $1,200? Somewhere in that ballpark is my guess. that they have to file. It's just like at a casino. If you go to a casino and you win $300 or $400, nobody's reporting. But if you get that one big thing and you make $1,000 or $2,000, they have to report it to the government that you had a gambling winning of X number of dollars. Same is true when you sell an asset, a collectible, for a substantial amount of money, and I'm not sure what that dollar amount is. Anyway, I'm going to go to
$3,000 for joint.
Really? $3,000 for a collectible?
If I'm reading it right, I'll look a little more.
Okay. So Al in Baltimore, annuities.
Hello.
Real quick.
You made reference before to something with two or three initials, the opposite of an annuity, ATF or something. You said that's...
An ETF, an exchange-traded fund?
What is that? Can you define that?
Well, it's a mutual fund that you buy and sell on the stock market as opposed to directly to the mutual fund group.
So you're opposed to, let's say, a fixed so-called indexed annuity.
No, I'm not opposed to anything. We are fee-only advisors, Al. We can buy and sell any investment. It doesn't matter to us. We don't make more money selling this one or that one. All I'm saying is that index annuities are typically misrepresented to the public, and when you understand the technical aspects of how it works, the fees involved, and the misrepresentations that the insurance companies are making, you'll realize that it's not as exciting a vehicle as they make it out to be.
Where can you be reached during the day?
Well, we can be reached at 410-823-7283. 410-823-SAVE is an easy way to remember that.
I see. Will you be in tomorrow? Because I know it's a holiday weekend coming up.
I am in tomorrow, but only until about 11:30 myself. But Tommaso will be there pretty much all day. Since he's going away for 2 weeks,
that's
Right. He's the vacation man, you know. I don't give vacations. They don't let me go on vacation.
Oh, my goodness.
Hey, Al. They're going to play a violin for me. Well, you got a little violin down there for me, Tom?
Yep, a little one. Can you hear it?
What's the collect? I only got about 20 seconds.
Yeah, it didn't come up, so I'm going to have to look it up.
Well, you know. And the National Credit Union Share Insurance Fund.
Right, yep.
National Credit Union Share Insurance Fund, fully backed by the good faith and credit of the United States government. Insured up to $250,000. But if you have a joint account, that's $500,000. Mm-hmm. You can play all kinds of games. Mm-hmm. You could set up an account for me, that's $250, an account for my wife, that's $250, an account for both of us, that's $500. We got $1 million of insurance with just three accounts.
In the same institution.
In the same institution. You just have to know how to play the game,
that's That's right.
Anyway, Tommaso, we will see you in about 3 weeks,
right?
You'll be gone for a while.
That's right.
Anyway, this is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.
All right.